Before we get into this episode, just a heads up that it was recorded a couple weeks ago and I was saving it in case my week got too crazy to record an episode. And Kevin Carr is just absolutely fantastic. Great physical therapist, strength coach at MBSC, and now he's doing awesome education and certification stuff as well. I know you're going to love this episode. Here it is. Well, welcome back to the FitCast. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and I'm very happy to have on the show another Kevin that I have known for quite a long time now. I guess it's been about 5 years, and this has been part of the running trend of episodes that I've been doing, talking to younger people that are in the industry, but have been doing this stuff for a really long time and that are really, you know, starting to be the people that are motivating others and are starting to help others become better. And that is, of course, Kevin Carr from Mike Bowles Strength and Conditioning, Movement as Medicine, and he is also one of the co-founders of Certified Functional Strength Coach Certification. Kevin, how are you doing?
Ah, thank you. Thanks for having me on here. Yeah, I think it's probably like for us, yeah, like 6 years. Known you.
Yeah, I remember. This is kind of like with Connor and Brendan. It's a little bit like going down memory lane because. I think you started and you interned at MBSC and then you came on full time and then Brendan came on after you, because you knew Brendan. And then through Brendan, we also got Anataco, who has been at MBSC also for like 5 years now. So it's been a pretty good, I mean, you've been a pretty good bang for your buck for Mike Boyle to get some hires out of. So it's worked out all right.
Yeah. We were able to drag them over from another gym and get them to work.
Yeah, now we're all at MBSC. Everyone's been there for a long time. It's a pretty good environment. But what we're going to do today is we got some like questions and some topics from the audience, but we're going to hit on those and also go into a couple subjects more in depth, like almost like a seminar structure, just because I've seen you do a couple talks now. I know you're going to be talking at Perform Better in Europe in a couple months, or I guess by the time that this comes out, it's going to be relatively soon, but you're going to be speaking there. And also, like I said, you've been really front-running the education stuff that we do at MBSC with Brendan Rurick in terms of talks for the interns and also for programming the systems that we put together and for Certified Functional Strength Coach. And now I will mention my dog just got back from a walk. He's chewing on a bone pretty hard right now. So if that pops up, it's just because he's going to do it. But let's get into the discussion and really talk about your history, just to give people a little bit of background on you. I mean, in terms of college, and like I said, you ended up coming to MBSC and you did massage school. So let's start with that.
Yeah. I met Brendan and Anna at UMass Amherst. So we were all kinesiology students there. So we all kind of became friends just being in the program in college. And then was it my sophomore year of college when I was 20, I interned at MBSC. I'd been working at a Gold's Gym at the time. I was clueless. I was training people. I had an ACE training certification. I didn't know much, but I was a guy in the gym who was a trainer. I looked over and he was doing this plate circuit that I'd never seen it before, and he asked me to come join him, and it smoked me. I was crushed. And he told me, he's like, "Oh, have you ever heard of a Mike Boyle?" And he's like, "Oh, I just came back from this mentorship." And he's like, "Oh, you should look into interning." And well, the rest is history, really, from here. So that Clark Evans, if he's listening to this, he's responsible for me ending up at MBSC, and that was in 2008. So now it's 2014, yes. 2015.
Yeah, I know. So now, I mean, we're talking a couple years ago, but when did you start really getting into like taking over the program design, like working on the adult programs and also for the athletes?
I guess, you know, at the time when Nicole Rodriguez had moved on a few years back, when Brendan and I kind of started to take over doing internship education and working with the interns, we also started to kind of take our hand at doing the group programming and the adult programming. So, a few years ago, we both kind of teamed up to kind of educate the staff and bring along the younger staff as they came in and we made new hires. So we've been kind of going at that now for probably about, it was about, that was almost like 5 years ago now. So
yeah, it kind of flies a little bit. So let's talk about really what you're doing on a day-to-day basis, because you know, outside of program design, obviously you're running groups, you're working with athletes, you're working with really everyone from, you know, your 10, 11 year olds athletes that were getting in the door all the way up into like 70 and 80 year olds, like elderly people. But let's start with just kind of talking about working with those middle-aged adults, just because I think one of the great things that you do, group with a wide range of skill levels and abilities and injuries. So how do you deal with that?
Well, when you have such a varied group of clientele, like in one group, like if I have, you know, 8 or 10 adult athletes all together, and, you know, I might have a couple that are seemingly perfectly healthy and another few that might have, you know, knee injury history, or someone who might have, you know, a shoulder mobility issue. It's really about, you know, prior planning. We always say, you know, the saying's, you know, prior planning prevents poor performance, right? So if we have a system in place, and that's really what I think our strength is at MBSC, is that, you know, we have something to refer to and manage. So as coaches, especially our young coaches, can, you know, manage these groups effectively. So, you know, we have our progression or regression system kind of laid out, that, you know, we have a quick go-to reference for all of our coaches to kind of know, you know, where to go. So, you know, if I have an athlete who has trouble, you know, pressing overhead, they're unable to press overhead or have a poor shoulder mobility score, we know exactly what our go-to regression is to, if we have to work on T-spine or work on breathing, and then give them an alternative rather than overhead press, like is maybe a rowing exercise or a push-up that might be more applicable to them. So, you know, it's really about having something planned out ahead of time to make it a little bit more easy for our younger coaches and for our older coaches, just to have something to reference.
Yeah, it's like when I got to MBSC all those years ago, there was a program in place, but there wasn't a system in place to whether it's, like you said, use a regression or progression, or even you know, the term that Charlie Weingraf has used and that we use for going to different exercises that may be not due to ability levels but lateralizations, just if we need to go that route too, having all these different options at hand. So I don't know, can you talk a little bit about kind of the development of that system? Because I know, you know, Brendan and you worked on that, and it was kind of just a thing of like Brendan looking at the program and be like, yeah, we actually do this, but we don't have it in the system. We just do it.
Yeah. Well, it kind of came from, like, we were looking at like the athlete sheets, and like people were like, oh, you guys hand out the same program to everybody. You know, it's a cookie cutter program. But then I look at my 10 athletes and I got 10 programs that start in a template that really say, like, okay, ideally in a perfect world, everyone would goblet squat today and or swing today and push up today, or whatever the exercises are. But then when you looked at the sheet, they were all marked up and edited, and it might say, you know, oh, this person's not doing swing, they're doing toe touch, and this person's not doing single leg deadlift, they're doing leg lowers. And like we realized, like we had developed through, you know, our education and our practical experience, like how we managed all these situations and how we managed a large group and all these different skill levels and all these different deficiencies if they had problems. And what we really did is we tried to hash it all out and put together like a wide spectrum on pieces of paper for all our movements that we were training. So it that way we could figure out, you know, if our 80% of our athletes might be able to do come in and goblet squat, what are we doing with the other 20%? To regress them backwards or to progress them forwards. And we kind of just built out a system. So, I mean, for an example, like I had a group of adults this morning who, you know, ideally, like I'd like to have most of them be working on their swings, but there are some that, you know, we have to lateralize back to deadlift. And maybe that's their version of the swing. It's just they're working on their hinge pattern through the deadlift. And there was another woman in the group who was a newer athlete, still had to kind of hone her hinge pattern a bit. So we worked on a kettlebell hinge where she's holding the bell up at her chest and she's just working on hinging. And when then she shows me, you know, she can own that pattern, we'll progress her forward to deadlift and eventually to swing. And just having that at your disposal gives you a lot of confidence as a coach to kind of move people where you need to move them and be able to act on the fly. You know, we always say you want adaptable coaches, and, you know, that it makes you adaptable. to kind of have that at your disposal.
So yeah, let's take a second and stop and talk about the hip hinge pattern, because that is, I mean, if you're listening to this, you probably are on Facebook and you've seen a wide range of videos of people trying to do, whether it be a kettlebell swing or a deadlift, and just not being able to get that hip hinge down and just really bending from the knees and turning into a squat. So what do you do when you bring someone in day one and you're trying to teach them the hip hinge, and what does that process look like from like day one to maybe like week six or week nine or something like that?
Yeah. So the first thing I want to make sure is, like, can they just touch their toes? So I'll have them, you know, pop their shoes off, bring their feet together and just see, can you go down and just give me a toe touch pain-free? Can I see that you can just easily go down there, touch them and come back up? And if that looks like work to me, then the first thing I want to do is, if they can't just give me an easy toe touch, then I know that they're going to have trouble down the road if they're going to try to hinge or deadlift. They show me that they don't have control of their pelvis and of their lumbar spine. So I'll take them through a toe touch progression from there. So, you know, elevating the toes up on a beam or a wedge, giving them a little something to adduct and squeeze in between their knees, and they're exhaling and trying to go down and get those toes. And we're working on giving them that back first. So that's like their core competency they have to show me they can have. From there, assuming they achieve their toe touch, we'd work on just like a hinge pattern. I use a PVC pipe just to try to give them some reference points on the back of their head, along their T-spine, and along their sacrum. And I'll just have them work on grooving a pattern, keeping everything relatively neutral and working on their hinge. And then from there, just kind of progressing into a loaded hinge, like I had mentioned, just holding the bell right in front of the rib cage, you know, and working on loading up a hinge that way with a little bit of load up front. That can kind of cue them to brace their core a little bit and kind of progress the pattern. And then moving along, once they show me competency, we'd go to deadlift. So I get the bell under them, and we're pulling from the floor. And from there, you know, we're cooking with gas. I want to see them just start to really load a deadlift and show me that they can pull from the floor pretty well. And then from there, we work our way back to swing. So that's kind of the progression I would lay out. And that seems to work pretty well for us at the gym.
I mean, I know definitely hip hinge is going to be one of the things that we're going to take a little bit extra time to teach people. Are there any other like basic movement patterns that you find that you need to regress a lot of times on day one from what our baseline would be for those adults or those, you know, middle-aged clients or people in the groups?
Mm-hmm. Hinge is definitely huge, because it translates to, I mean, not just deadlift and swing, but if they need to be able to hinge and sit into their hips just to squat, even though that's a knee dominant movement. And then that carries over, double leg hinge carries over to single leg hinge with single leg deadlift. And although it's a little different beast we're dealing with when we go one leg deadlift, if they can't double leg hinge, they're going to have trouble single leg hinging as well. So that's definitely the big one. Additionally, I'd say pretty much anything overhead with a lot of them, just teaching them, you know, how to brace while they press overhead. So a lot of our athletes and adults, one, are stiff through their T-spine, and two, lack the control between their ribs and their pelvis. So they tend to bias extension when they press overhead. So teaching people how to brace and not extend through their lumbar spine so they can gain overhead mobility. So we're often teaching them, we'll start with like floor sliding and wall sliding. Sometimes if they don't show us competency with overhead pressing, just to teach them how to, you know, exhale and brace their core while they reach the arm overhead. So that's one that I'll typically reteach a lot of people that come into the gym as well.
Let's jump around a little bit and talk about, you know, what are you seeing a lot when people are coming in through the door at Movement as Medicine? Because, you, like I mentioned before, you're getting a wide range of everything from athletes to people that are sitting at a desk 40 hours a week. So what are the common, I guess, issues that you're having to treat on a week-to-week basis? And maybe if you can give them to people through audio, what are some of the things that people could be doing to avoid this stuff?
I'd say, yeah, I mean, I see everything, a huge spectrum, but the consistent thing I see come through the door, no matter who it is that comes in, is just a lack of control of their core canister, really meaning their pelvis and their rib cage. So I see most everybody comes in. I mean, we have a lot of athletes who are hockey athletes specifically and soccer athletes who are really extended and are in that kind of open scissors type posture when they come in through the door. And likewise, I'm seeing a lot of adults who lack integrity on their anterior core as well. So most people who come in, you know, after we screen them out, it's funny, like we always say, like I screen you out, I put you through your breakouts and figure out where you're going. And then a lot of people, it goes back to me starting with teaching them to breathe again and just have some integrity at the most basic level of motor development. Really, it's like taking them back to really like square one, putting them on their back and having them breathe. So the one thing I always tell people is like, you don't get worse by practicing breathing. So if there's one thing you can do is just working on learning how to exhale again and being able to create a stable force couple between, you know, your diaphragm and your pelvic floor and keeping your pelvis and rib cage aligned. Because that, you know, most our dysfunctions start from the inside out and work outwards. So I say, if you can create a stable base in the middle, a lot of those things that you see on your extremities and your shoulders and your hips and your legs and working outward tend to clean up a lot once you create a more stable base to work off.
So let's again, we're going to kind of be going to a couple different places, but let's stick on this for a second, because I know in the last couple episodes when I was talking with like Brendan and Connor, you know, PRI came up quite a bit, just because it's not, like I said before, it's not really new. The concepts are not really new, but they're new to us. They're new to like our fishbowl part of the industry. So what have you taken away from it? And I mean, one of the big takeaways that aren't going to be too complicated for people to pick up through the audio. And I know you mentioned breathing. Where should people start in terms of programming that into their day-to-day training or week-to-week training?
Mm-hmm. It's definitely a powerful tool in the PRI. The PRI wormhole can get like really deep, and I encourage people to look into it. But at the most basic level, just laying on your back and learning how to exhale. Most everybody is stuck in a big inhalation all the time. We see people who are very overly extended, and they're very sympathetically driven people. Like you think about people who, your adult clients who come after work, or your kids who are stressed out, and they're holding a lot of sympathetic tone, and they're constantly in what we would call an inhalation stage. Teaching people just to exhale at the most basic level, learning how to just lay on your back and take a nice inhale and get your air out, and exhale and force the air out your lips and just control your abdomen and draw your rib cage down is probably the most basic, easy thing you can add to your training to improve things without getting, like you said, too complicated. And like Ron says, you know, we want to take the concepts from PRI and add them to what you're doing to make whatever you're doing better. That alone can help a lot of people. Like when I run my breathing and stretching class at the at MBSC, that's the first thing we start with most people, is just in every class, is just getting them on their back and helping them find their rib cage and start to just use their diaphragm again. I mean, that's our most basic muscle that most people don't use, and getting them to start to use it correctly again can really go a long way.
Let's talk about that for a second, because I know that's really been a hit at MBSC, is you basically just kind of like are giving into the demand from the people by giving them a breathing and movement class. So how long is that? What does it consist of? Just in case, you know, there are people listening that, you know, might want to try to do something similar.
Yeah. This was kind of born out of a couple things. One, to learning the PRI stuff and wanting to really give people more breathing practice, and also getting into taking actually the FRC course with Andre Espina and going through some of the mobility practices that he taught us there. And then also seeing my clients, some of them who, one, wanted to get an extra day of almost like recovery work and like extra mobility and stretching, not necessarily intensive training, and people who were going to things like yoga and kind of getting wrecked by, you know, getting into positions where they probably shouldn't be, or, you know, not necessarily getting the coaching they needed. So it seemed like a no-brainer. So what we do is we offer a 30-minute class. We have a few slots all throughout the week in the mornings and the nights. We have them Monday and Thursday mornings at 10 a.m. and then Thursday nights at 6:30 p.m. And it's a 30-minute window. We kind of try to place them before and after adult groups so people can kind of either come before or after their other training sessions. And the first thing we do, like I said, we just kind of start with just teaching basic breathing. I get everyone on the floor, laying on their back, and we work on just nice, easy inhalation and exhalation, teaching people to kind of engage their core and draw down their rib cage and get their air out. Most people have a very hard time when you watch actually getting a forceful breath. Like, you actually have to teach people, like, you have to purse your lips and blow out air like you're blowing out candles. Like, everyone kind of, no one does that. And just teaching them that. And then we'll do some focused soft tissue work with a lacrosse ball, just working through kind of like the four knots, as we'd say, like the shoulders and the hips. And then we'll get into the feet and a little bit in the quads. And then we do some real active stretching and mobility work, much of the stuff that we kind of got out of the functional range conditioning class with Dr. Spina, just working on active hip mobility, kind of articulating all of our joints from our toes all the way up to our necks. You know, you realize most people don't ever put their joints through a full range of motion on a daily basis. Like, if you're laying down when you wake up and then you sit in a chair and eat breakfast, you sit down, you go to the bathroom, you sit in your car, you sit at work, and then you sit on the couch and watch TV and you lay back down. Some people never get their hips past 90 degrees, much less their toe joints or their ankle joints or their knee joints or their shoulders or their necks. So really just trying to give people access to full range of motion, because mobility especially, you know, if you don't use it, you lose it. So really just kind of work our way through every single joint and give some people some active stretch and some joint articulations in just a quick 30 minutes, and then we get them out the door.
What are the most challenging demographics to work with in our industry are runners, and even more so triathletes. And I know you've worked with a ton of them. So what is, like, what's your onboarding process when you get someone that is coming in? And, like, we get a lot of runners, and now that you're getting a lot of triathletes that come into MBSC because they're only running. They're just running, and then things start breaking down, and they kind of come to you for help. So, yeah, can you talk a little bit about that, and what do you kind of have to do programming-wise to get them back to where they should be?
Yeah, it's one of those things where I've developed a niche with them, and I don't think I've ever really run more than 5 miles in my life, but I'll take it. They're a fun group. It was kind of a foreign group to me initially, is something that haven't done, but now we have a nice group of them here. Really, I mean, it starts with screening. Everyone gets an FMS. I'll take them through a number of additional screens, like the stuff from PRI and whatnot. And really, a lot of them, I try to think about, like, filling buckets with them. So, like, what buckets do I need to fill with them? Most of the time, I don't need to spend much time doing, you know, specific energy system based work as far as, like, their aerobic capacity does. That bucket is filled for them. Most of the time, it's really about, you know, creating durability and creating basic joint stability in their hips, their ankles, their core, and things like that. There's usually a lot to be desired in them as far as their single leg ability, single leg stance ability, and the strength in their hips, and also power. They always think so much about, you know, getting aerobic endurance and training that way, but giving them power, the biggest thing you can possibly do for them is really just get them stronger in their lower body. As far as durability goes, you know, giving them the ability to alternate and create stability on both hips. You'll see a lot of them are kind of like one-sided animals. They're running on two legs, but they're getting a lot of horsepower out of one side as opposed to the other. So, you know, creating strength on both sides. So unilateral training is especially important for them. Single leg squatting, rear foot elevated split squatting, single leg deadlifting, you'll find will be extremely challenging for a lot of them. Even though they're constantly running, they have trouble a lot of the time standing on one leg. So really developing single leg strength and developing power. They get a nice dose of sled work when they come in and train with me specifically. And then probably the thing most people don't think about is really getting them to turn it down. Endurance athletes especially are really prone to, you know, more is better and train kind of mentality. And, you know, getting them to realize, you know, the value of recovery days and see the value of, you know, doing things like breathing and going through mobility and recovery days consistently and getting soft tissue work has been really beneficial, at least in my practice with them. So, you know, right now, I have a lot of people who are, you know, kind of training for the Boston Marathon coming up. So, you know, just doing manual work and massage work with them, kind of like on a maintenance type level week to week, you know, dealing with feet and lower legs and hips that kind of get banged up as the miles start to rise, has been pretty beneficial. Just about keeping people, you know, from needing rehab work and kind of addressing it more as prehab work, if you want to use that word.
Any tips for trainers or coaches out there for if they do have runners that they're working with who just don't want to turn it off? Have you like hit any walls and have any tips?
Yeah, well, most of my athletes are working with a running coach, and the big thing for me is developing relationship with the person programming their miles for them. If you have any serious runners and marathoners, they pretty much all have running coaches who are writing out their programming. And for me as a strength coach, you know, I'm not gonna come into their domain and completely try to shake their world up. But it's important, if you're gonna be programming them in the weight room, to develop a relationship with the person who's, you know, programming for them out in the road or on the bike or on the pool. You know, you guys are both, you know, training them and applying these training stresses. If you don't have communication with them, then that you're neither of you suffers. The athlete, is the one that suffers. So you need to reach out to whoever's, you know, programming for them and develop a relationship with them. And that has been huge for me. Initially when I started, that wasn't something I saw and understood when I was younger. And now, you know, being able to talk to them and kind of ask them, you know, what are you seeing from a programming perspective and their performance and my performance reviews and what I'm seeing, we can kind of collaborate. And that way we have kind of extra set of eyes on either side on the athlete, so we can kind of better make decisions and program from them. And then the athlete responds better because they feel like they have a team around them and they're more likely to kind of take your advice in that role. So that's the number one thing I recommend, is have a good communication with whoever's programming their miles for them.
One of the things that I also talked to, you know, a couple previous people on the show about is like, what do you do for guys like you that are super hungry for new information, for education, going to courses, going to seminars, like you mentioned before, the FRC, PRI, SFMA and FMS. Like, how do you take that stuff and make sure you don't go too far off the reservation and you kind of stay on like what your foundation is for programming, but still trying to integrate some of the things that you're learning from those courses?
The big thing is like, you need to know who you are and who you practice with and what your philosophy is. And like they always say, you know, methods are many and, you know, like principles are few. So like, know what your principles are. And then when you go to courses, you know, think about what is the principles that I can apply and what is it that I believe in and how does this fit? So like, I actually had a conversation with one of our interns the other day. They were like, okay, what course should I take? Should I take this course? Should I take this course? And kind of like wanted to really dive in to everything. I said, well, you got to think about, you know, who are you going to be working with and what is the lens you're going to see everything through? And I said, if you haven't taken FMS, and if I'm talking to a therapist, I'm saying, if you haven't taken SFMA, you know, that's start there. You know, that's the lens I see everything through personally. And then, you know, I have to look at everything through the big picture, through those principles that kind of, that Gray and Lee have put together, and like using the joint by joint, like from Mike, like those are the things I first, believe in. And then from there, diving into PRI, because that piece fits in, okay, to that framework. And then diving into the FRC stuff that I learned with Spina, that's a method that fits into correcting that stuff. But like, you need to have a big principle stuff you believe in first. So whenever I talk about those courses, I say you got to take the functional movement courses first, and then kind of build your umbrella out from there.
Can you talk a little bit about how the FRC has influenced the way you do things? Because I go back again, since we're kind of, you guys work close together. Brendan just went to one of those courses a couple weeks ago now, and now I found it super fascinating. But I'm trying to see how exactly this is going to carry over into kind of like what we do in terms of strength and conditioning. Does it more fall into what you do in terms of a massage therapist, or, you know, outside and just more towards the mobility side of things?
Yeah. Andre Spina has done an outstanding job. He's one of the most well-read and researched people I've come across as far as how he put together his system. And like he kind of said to us, like, I don't find the way I practice and find research to support. I found research to support it and then developed a practice. And I really think it applies, the FRC, the functional range conditioning, especially to strength and conditioning coaches. And really that he's just teaching about, you know, tissue histology and how tissue responds to stress and how you can influence tissue structure and mobility for as a result of that from, you know, training in a certain manner. And it can really be applied, the principles that he teaches, and he has a very well developed progression, you know, to whatever you're currently doing. It's just a matter of how you go about stressing the tissue. So for instance, you know, whatever joint range of motion you're trying to develop and whatever range you want to work in, if you put the joint into that range and then practice progressively through the principles that he teaches, you can generate more mobility. So I think, I always tell strength and conditioning coaches, the FRC course especially, I think directly applies to coaches in that are trying to, you know, improve how their clients move. I do apply a lot of the principles in the clinic at Movement is Medicine as far as, you know, rehab goes, but, you know, the connective tissue is connective tissue no matter, you know, who you're working with and what you're working on. So it's, I think it's definitely a immediately something you can apply as a strength and conditioning coach or a personal trainer.
What did that course look like when you got there? What did it consist of?
So, you know, we got in first, he spends a lot of time initially, lecturing and giving, going right down to, like, you know, right to the single cell level in discussing like what happens when you're going through, you know, passive stretch or active stretch and how you influence tissue structure over time and like really getting down into the nitty gritty, which I personally really enjoy that. From there we went through a progression from the most basic level of, you know, his, as he terms them, pails and rails, system and kind of how you develop mobility and then progressively stressing the tissue more. So like we talked about having, you know, a progression or regression system for strength work and for corrective work, you have a progression or regression system for mobility work. And that's essentially what he has designed, working from the most low level all the way up to, like, if you watch him move, if you ever look at his Instagram or his YouTube channel, working all the way up to the levels like you see him in Dewey Nielsen putting out there. So essentially that's what he's developed, is a progression regression system for mobility. And for, you know, the rest of the time we were there, we really went through everything from, you know, like from your toe joints and working on controlling your toes all the way up to your neck and everything in between, and just developing control through all those joint systems. And the one thing that they really stress, like your take home, I'm going to say, if you get from that weekend, is, you know, there's no use in having mobility that you don't have strength and stability and control over. And the main thing you really work on is, you know, creating stability in these mobile positions. And that's really what mobility is. He terms it, you know, mobility is flexibility plus strength. And that's what we work on practicing throughout that entire weekend.
So, I mean, not like I was saying before, you're kind of an influencer now when it comes to like the CFSC and working with our mentorship groups, MBSC Thrive and all that stuff. But like, who are the people like who's influencing you? Because I know we get a lot of people that come into our facility, they do in-services. Of course, we have, you know, one of the best minds in the industry in Mike Boyle, you know, that we get to talk to all the time. But I guess outside of Mike, you know, who are your biggest influences and who do you think people should keep an eye out for and be reading their stuff and going to their seminars?
Yeah, it was funny. I was just kind of writing an article. I titled it like my mentors, right? And I was thinking about it, and I almost have like two groups of like mentors in my life. And I have, you know, the people at the gym are the people that people don't like know about, right? So like Mike obviously has been huge, like probably my biggest technical and coaching mentor in my life. But then the people who were there when I first showed up are people who taught me everything about coaching and about like working with athletes specifically and handling like the art of coaching. So like, it's funny, like people like Jamie Rodriguez and Nicole Rodriguez and Dan Gableman and Josh Bonital and Anthony Mirando and Kyle Holland and all those people who were there when I first started, like those people I can look back and think like when I coach on a day-to-day basis, literally like are 100% responsible for how I carry myself while I coach. Currently, technically, as far as what am I putting into practice now, as far as going to courses, like I obviously Charlie Weingroff and Patrick Ward especially have been very influential to me. Like Patrick as a massage therapist and a strength and conditioning coach has been huge because I've kind of really tried to follow that path. And then everyone in kind of that PRI camp, I've tried to digest the information that gets out there, and like people who have been my peers in MBSC, like Connor Ryan, continue to teach me a lot. Furthermore, I'm going to finish taking the Andrea Spina courses, the functional range release courses as well. I took one of those last year, his hands-on course, and it was outstanding. So those are the ones I'm really focused on currently.
Yeah, it's really funny. I get that question a lot, like about what it's like to work at MBSC, and it's weird because I've always used to say that it's like a master's program, or it's like a, you know, an extra 4 years of college or a super long internship where you're getting all this great knowledge and then you're going off and doing something even better. But I think the even better example is like Saturday Night Live, where you're seeing this cast that comes in and people end up moving on and they go to big movies. Like you mentioned, Nicole Rodriguez is now at Exos and she's like leading education there. Now Jamie Rodriguez has gone and done great things in strength and conditioning. Kyle Holland, who's doing awesome stuff. Dave Rack, who's doing awesome stuff. Like it's kind of just ridiculous how many great people come through that door and then leave and then they go do other fantastic stuff.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like when I was writing out this article, I was like, can think of like specific ways that I coach for each of those people.
Yeah.
That I like handle it a certain way, and it's all like really experiential learning and practice. And it's like I could think like when I was coaching cleans yesterday, the way Garnet taught me how to clean, like I still coach that way, and I'm like, oh, that's how I taught the intern. So it's funny, like you're like when you say master's program, like those were my teachers for sure. So it's and those are people like people don't necessarily always know about. So it's almost you almost wish you could bottle all that up and give that to people as coaches as well.
Yeah, I think Mike does a great job whenever he goes and does like a seminar and stuff like that. He's always like, you know, this is I got to thank the staff because they're the ones like that are really running the show and they're allowing me to go do these talks and stuff like that. But it's put together a really crazy culture. So if you are listening to this and you're in college and you're looking for an internship, might be a good place to go look and see if you can get in there. But you know, a couple of things that I wanted to talk to you about. Now, first and foremost, what do you do when you're done with college? You got a job and you got some of that education. You got some of those hours in the gym. We mentioned a couple different courses that you can go take. Like, what do you think is absolutely necessary outside of the FMS for people that are strength and conditioning coaches or personal trainers? Where am I going to get the best bang for my buck? Because this stuff is not cheap.
No. The big thing, get somewhere you can train people and train and practice and honestly fail. Like, go out there and train people and just practice, and you're going to screw up. And I, like, the biggest learning moments I have is, like, is trying to coach someone during my internship and failing miserably and having someone come intervene and teach and teach me a lesson there. And, like, when I deal with interns, like, I try to provide those teachable moments. And the big thing I say is, like, get an internship, go volunteer, you know, just shadow around a coach, like, as much as you can. That, I think, is the most valuable thing. Just as a lot of coaches, or people who want to be coaches, I should say, like, they get out of their, you know, exercise science program, and the first thing they say is, their first question is, what certifications did I get? Well, that's going to be extremely important, but additionally, like, what is the experience that you should get? You got to put yourself in a position to just start practicing and or at least having some guided practicing and apprenticing. So at least from my standpoint as a coach, when people email or call and ask to come in and shadow or ask to come in and volunteer, I almost always want to take people, because having eager volunteers is always great. More people who want to get better is something we always want. So get out there and practice. From there, like I said, FMS would be the first thing I recommend. And then obviously the certification I would recommend would definitely be the CFSC, as it's applied in practice, you know. So it's teaching people how to be adaptable coaches and actually demanding that they do something that is practical.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about that towards the end, but I think we're obviously incredibly biased, but it's a case of, I can tell you we've certified, as of this recording, like almost 400 people. We have not had anyone that has been unsatisfied. With the whole thing. I mean, the number one thing that we're getting is people that run gyms, they're sending new hires to us to get them up to speed because of how much, like, it literally costs in terms of time and money to educate a new hire or someone that is fresh out of college. Because then we had great teachers in college, but you really don't learn a lot when you, like, get out the door and then you start looking at someone in the face and be like, all right, well, go train me.
Yeah.
Like, really, what are you going to do? So that's kind of like what that is all about. But before we do that, last thing I want to talk to you about is, you know, besides people and courses and stuff like that, are you reading or, like, listening to any stuff that is really on the front of your brain in terms of, like, stuff that people should check out?
Yeah. It's funny. I'm kind of like one of those multiple book people. So I keep a few different things from different genres on tap at all times, so I can kind of, no matter what mood I'm in or at the time of the day, I can always, you know, have something at my disposal. So I'm usually, you know, listening to, you know, or reading a life development or personal development type book, and then reading something that's kind of completely, you know, for entertainment, and then always having something that's, you know, applicable to strength and conditioning or rehab in my hand. So out of those three things, I'm currently working my way through Franz Bosch book, Running, the Biomechanics and Exercise Phys and Applied Practice. So it's that one's pretty awesome. It's a good practical book as far as applying, you know, sprint and energy system development. And I enjoy that one a lot. Mike gave us a good personal development book. I'm already kind of hashed out halfway through, The Slight Edge by Jeff Olson, which it's really good. It's a real easy read too. It's like, it's under 300 pages. You can kind of fly through it pretty quickly. And it's just about creating, you know, simple habits and practices to improve your life and improve your professional development. And I just actually finished listening to the new Tony Robbins book, The Money, Master the Game, which is kind of like a financial development in 101 and how-to book, which is something that, you know, being someone with a background in strength and conditioning, you know, I don't really have that intimate knowledge of the financial world. So that one's been extremely helpful. I'd recommend that to most people. So
some stuff for people to think about, man. You got to think about the money, because this industry, I mean, you don't really get into it to make a lot of money. So you got to take care of what you got.
Yeah, exactly. Learning how to manage that.
All right, so let's we'll wrap up. We'll talk about kind of what you're going to be up to. But like I said, for the certified functional strength coach stuff, by the time that you hear this, Kevin already went to Dublin, Ireland to do one out there, and it's been all over the place across the country and in Canada. We're going to be going to Germany later this year, but I think the thing that we'll kind of say with that is, like, you know, just go to certifiedfsc.com. If you listen to the previous episodes, you heard Brendan and I talk about it. And even Connor is going to get to check it out when you go to Drive 495 later this year, which is not announced yet, but we'll be going there at some point. And I think kind of like the last thing is, if I was going to ask you, Kevin, who is the certification for? And also to keep in mind that we have not announced anything that is after, let's say, April. So don't mention anything else that we're doing.
Yeah, definitely. So a certified functional strength coach, the big thing I always tell people is, like, what our field needs. Like, when we look at, you know, developing coaches, and we see that on a daily basis, taking kids who are fresh out of college and have no experiences, we need to create what is our minimal practical standard for people to be able to practice. So, you know, when you think about a lot of fields like massage therapy, I needed to get a state licensure. I had to have so many hours in practice. I had to graduate from a school after a year. And, you know, some states you have to have twice as many hours as I did, and you have to take a test. So that defines a minimal standard, just like as if I was going to be a barber or a hairdresser. Like, you need to pass a test and show you have minimal practical competency. And with the privatized, you know, portion of the fitness industry, where it's a lot of, you know, private certifying companies that don't necessarily create a practical standard. There aren't many tests out there that are going to demand that you actually coach another human. We wanted to create that and essentially give what we demand our interns to have to go through to get through an internship at MBSC, show us that you can coach and progress and regress. So that's, we want to give this to, like, that coach, that, you know, the entry-level coach or the younger coach or any coach who just wants to show that they meet the minimal requirements to be training other humans. And what I think you ultimately get out of being a certified functional strength coach is, like, you learn how to be, like we said, an adaptable coach. If you have anyone who walks through the door, you have, you know, a Rolodex that you've developed in your head of, you know, how do I manage this athlete or this client? And, you know, we demand that you can progress and regress and deal with situations where it might not just be, you know, that easy client where you can do anything with. You know, we want you to be able to work smoothly across all experience levels. So, and that's really what you get, you know, the ability to kind of to coach across a spectrum and manage situations and be adaptable.
And then finally, I just want to mention that you can probably the best place to go check out Kevin's stuff. First, go to at Coach Kevin Carr on Twitter. But where else can people check out your stuff if they want to? Of course, movement-as-medicine.com as well, which I'll link to in the show notes.
Yeah. That check out our blog on our website. We try to, you know, get as much stuff up there as we can. At Twitter at Coach Kevin Carr and or at Movement as Med. For Movement as Medicine, we'll put out a lot of our information through you know, either Instagram as well, where we have some short posts we'll put up there, but definitely try to get on our website. We try to pump out some articles and videos as much as possible through there. And you can contact us as far as treatment goes. We have an online booking system for people to come in for therapy as well. So you can catch all that on the website.
Awesome. And before we do go, I just want to thank everyone out there that is supporting the show through Patreon at patreon.com/thefitcast. We have about 115 people supporting the show on there. But as I mentioned in the past, to make sure that these episodes get produced and out to you every single week, that is the best way to make sure that keeps happening. So thank you to everyone that is supporting the show through there. It means so much. And if you haven't already, go check it out. You can do it for just $1 per episode. You can even cap it at a per amount per month basis. So I usually do about 4 episodes. It'd be about $4 per month that it'd be supporting the show on. So thank you everyone that is doing that, and let's keep it going. So Kevin, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I know, I mean, at MBSC, everyone's super busy, but you're even more busy. You got like 18 things that you're juggling at once. So we'll definitely have to have you on again in the future. And what else do you have coming up that people can keep an eye out for? I know you're going to be doing some talks down the road.
Yeah. Like you said, probably by the time this comes out, I'll be in Munich by then doing a one day over there. We're going to be hosting a few mobile mentorships kind of around the country. Both Brendan and myself, if you go to bodybyboyle.com and go to the education link and check out the mobile mentorships, we have a whole number of them scheduled through the spring and the summer across the U.S. So if you're looking to kind of get into a small personalized seminar, we kind of keep these pretty small and go 2 days of coaching and corrective work and strength progressions. Check out our website and you can hop on there and get to a seminar, both with Brendan and myself. So that's going to be a lot of the teaching over the summer and, you know, moving around, getting coaching up and hopefully some more CFSC events, coming up pretty soon.
For sure. So that is going to do it for this episode of the FitCast. Don't forget, you can jump on iTunes. You can submit a review on there. Subscribe to the show so you do not miss an episode. Like I said, thank you to everyone that is supporting the show through Patreon. That is going to do it for this episode. We will see you next week. I'm in the fast lane, racing through the best days. I don't want to slow it down. I do what I want now. Getting down to the old school, just to kill with the new cool. Once the working day is done, it's our time for having fun. I'm gonna party hard until the sun comes up. The music feels so good. Dancing.